श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो फर्स्ट चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 11 भूरिणी भूरी कर्माणी श्रोतव्यानी विभागसः अतः साधो अत्र जत् सारम् समुद्धृत्वा मनीषया ब्रूहि भद्राय भूतानां जेनात्मा सुप्रसीदति भूरिणी भूरि कर्माणि श्रोतव्यानि विभागसः अतः साधो अत्र यत्सारम् समुद्धृत्य मनीषया ब्रूहि भद्राय भूतानां जेनात्मा सुप्रसीदति भूरिणी भूरि कर्माणि श्रोतव्यानि विभागसः अतः साधो यत्र यत्सारम् समुद्धृत्य मनीषया ब्रूहि भद्राय भूतानां जेनात्मा सुप्रसीदति भूरिणी भूरि कर्माणि श्रोतव्यानि विभागसः अतः साधो यत्र यत्सारम् समुद्धृत्य मनीषया ब्रूहि भद्राय भूतानां जेनात्मा सुप्रसीदति
भूरिणी
भूरि कर्माणि फेरियस भूरि मेनी कर्माणि ड्यूटीज श्रोतव्यानि टू बी लर्न्ड विभागसः बाय डिविजन ऑफ सब्जेक्ट मैटर अतः देयरफॉर साधो ओ सेज अत्र हियरिन जात व्हाटएवर सारम एसेंस समुद्धृत्त by selection manishaya best of your knowledge bruhi please tell us bhadraya for the good of bhutanam the living beings jena by which atma self suprasidati becomes fully satisfied. Translation. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only by many years of study. Therefore, O sage, please select the essential teachings of all these scriptures and explain them for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction, their hearts may be satisfied. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, Atma or Self is distinguished from matter and material elements. It is spiritual in constitution, and thus it is never satisfied by any amount of material planning. All scriptures and spiritual instructions are meant for the satisfaction of the self or atma. There are many varieties of approaches which are recommended for different types of living beings in different times and at different places. Consequently, the numbers of revealed scriptures are innumerable. There are different methods and prescribed duties recommended in these various scriptures. Taking into consideration the fallen condition of the people in general in this age of Kali, the sages of Naimisharana suggested that Sri Śrīta Gosvāmī relate the essence of all such scriptures, because in this age it is not possible for the fallen souls to understand and undergo all the lessons of all these various scriptures in a varna and ashram system. The varna and ashram society was considered to be the best institution for lifting the human being to the spiritual platform, but due to Kali Yuga, it is not possible to execute the rules and regulations of these institutions, nor is it possible for the people in general to completely sever relations with the families as the Varnashram institution prescribes. The whole atmosphere is surcharged with opposition, and considering this, one can see that spiritual emancipation for the common man in this age is very difficult. The reason for the sage's inquiry into this matter is explained in the following verse. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only after many years of study. Therefore, O sage, please select the essential teachings of all these scriptures and explain them for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be satisfied. So, this shloka is indicating that this Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all the Vedic scriptures. All the Vedas are giving us the direction towards the spiritual upliftment of the living entities, and finally how the living entity can become situated on the spiritual platform, not only the spiritual platform but the highest plane of the spiritual realm, Golok Vrindavan. That is the ultimate objective of the Vedas, and that has been very wonderfully described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, the shloka just before that describes that how the people of this age of Kali are totally unqualified for any kind of spiritual endeavor. It says, Prayan alpayusha shabho kalavashmin yugejana mando sumando matayo mando bhagga hi upadruta. But all the living entities in the age of Kali have very short span of life. They barely, now the average lifespan is about, I think, 45 or so. And then gradually it will become, Bhagavatam describes that if a person lives for 30 years, then it will be considered that he has lived, he has lived a very long life. So that is the condition of this age of Kali. The people have become, the lifespan has become very short. And not only that, they have become very lazy. Prayan alpayusha shubho kalavashmin yuge janan. Manda, meaning they are very lazy. Sumanda matayo, their mentality is very, very perverted. They are completely degraded. And manda bhagga, they are very unfortunate. And upadruta, they are constantly disturbed by the different catastrophes of this material nature. So that is the condition of this age of Kali, the people of this age of Kali. And then they pointed out the bhurini bhuri karmani srotabhani vibhagasya. The Vedas are vast, and in the Vedas innumerable duties have been prescribed, and unless and until one totally understands the Vedas, unless and until one has the thorough understanding of the Vedas, one cannot perceive the essence of the Vedic instructions. Just by taking different sections of the Vedas, we cannot possibly understand the Vedas. As a matter of fact, when people take different sections and try to understand the purport of the Vedas, then they end up becoming atheists. And this can also be described or compared to that in Gita Mahatva, the glories of Bhagavad Gita, it has been described, the Vedas have been compared to a cow. Sarva Upanishado Gavo, all the Upanishads have been compared to a cow, and Krishna has been compared to a cowherd boy. Krishna is actually the cowherd boy that tends the cow, the Vedas, and Arjun is the calf. And making Arjun the nimitta or object, Krishna, the cowherd boy, milked that cow called Veda, and the essence, the milk of that cow is Bhagavad Gita. Now, the essence is what is important. The essence of the cow is the milk, and milk is our food. But if somebody rejecting the milk accepts different parts of the cow's body, then he becomes a great sinner. Like the meat eaters are considered to be the greatest sinners, because they are. So the same way, if rejecting the essence of the Vedas, if somebody takes different aspects of the Vedas, like the cow's leg or the tail or the horn or whatever they take, is actually meaningless. Not only meaningless, it just throws them out of the context. So it is very, very important to understand what is the essential teachings of the Vedas, and that has been very profoundly explained through this question, and Srimad Bhagavatam has answered that question. Bhuhi bhadrani bhutanam jenatma suprasidati. Please tell us that very essence of the Vedas that completely satisfies all the turbulence of the mind. Our every living entity's mind is very, very agitated in this material platform. But when one gets to understand the essence of the Vedas, then one becomes totally satisfied. Krishna also explains in Bhagavad Gita that the Vedas are apparently dealing with the three modes of nature. But Arjuna, you transcend these modes of material nature. Because unless and until you transcend the modes of material nature, we cannot possibly understand the meaning of the Vedas. Traigunna Vishaya Veda Nistraigunna Bhavarjuna. Krishna is telling Traigunna Vishaya Veda. Apparently Vedas are dealing with the three modes of material nature. The Vedas actually have been divided into different sections. Some sections are dealing with the mode of ignorance, some sections are dealing with the mode of passion, and some are dealing with the mode of goodness. Like there are 18 Puranas, and out of those 18 Puranas, 6 Purans are dealing with the mode of ignorance, 6 are dealing with mode of passion, and 6 are dealing with the mode of goodness. Actually, 5 are dealing with the mode of goodness, and 1 is dealing with the mode of transcendental goodness, Vishuddha Sattva. And that one is Srimad Bhagavatam. Amalam Puranam. That Srimad Bhagavatam is the only Puran that doesn't have any contamination whatsoever. All the other Puranas are contaminated by some tinges of material modes. Like some by ignorance, some by passion, and some by mode of goodness. Even the mode of goodness has been considered to be ignorance or contamination. So, one, in order to understand the essence of the Vedic teachings, must transcend all these influences of the modes of material nature and come to the transcendental platform. Now, in order to do that, the Vedic philosophy has been very systematically arranged. The Vedas have been divided into three different khandas, and the Karma Khanda, Jnana Khanda, and Upasana Khanda, according to the needs of different individuals, according to the time, place, and circumstances. Not so much according as time, place, and circumstances, I would rather say with the individual's propensities. Like at certain platform, at certain point of time, living entities are in their gross physical platform. So when one identifies himself with the body, then he wants to become engaged in physical activities. And that section need has been clarified through the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Everybody in the bodily platform wants to be active and wants to enjoy this material nature. And the Vedas in the Karmakanda section is describing how one should act and how one should have some pleasure or enjoyment in the material platform. And that is the Karmakanda section. Then when one transcends the gross bodily platform, then he comes to the subtle intellectual platform, the mental and intellectual platform. And the mental and intellectual platform, those who are in the intellectual platform, they're naturally inclined for knowledge. So that section, or that propensities have been explained or enhanced by the Jnanakanda section of the Vedas. So the Karmakanda is a gross bodily platform, Jnanakanda is a mental and intellectual platform, and when one transcends the mental platform or intellectual platform and comes to the spiritual platform, then he is instructed by the Upasana Khanda. The Upasana Khanda section, the final section of the Vedas, is describing how he should become engaged in his spiritual activities. So this is how Vedas are gradually lifting the individuals from the lowest or the bottom the rung of consciousness to the highest development of consciousness. There actually, it is very obvious, like when you see the Vedas, there are various instructions and they all are dealing not in order to indulge people in those particular activities, but actually those instructions are there to transcend those platforms. Like the Karmakanda section of the Vedas does not instruct people to just be involved in the Karmakanda or just to remain in the bodily platform. The Karmakanda is actually lifting him to the Jnanakanda or the platform of knowledge. And then after that, transcending the platform of knowledge, one comes to the platform of worship or the platform of rendering service to the Lord. So it's a very, very scientific advancement of scientific advancement from this material nature to the spiritual nature. And these three khandas or these three branches or the sections of the Vedas have been further defined by six branches of philosophy known as short darshan. Short means six and darshan means philosophy. So those six branches of philosophy are known as karma mimamsa or purva mimamsa, then naya, vaisheshika, shankha, yoga and uttar mimamsa. This purva mimamsa or preliminary conclusion deals with the karma kanda. And the Karmakanda section has been analyzed by this Purva Mimamsa section of the philosophy. And then Jnanakanda has been defined or gradually progressed through four different branches of philosophy known as Naya or Logic, Vaisheshika or Atomic Theory, Shankha or Analytical Study, and Yoga, the process of linking up with the Super Soul. So these are the four branches that are four branches of philosophy that describes the Jnanakanda section of the Vedas. And then the Upasanakanda section has been defined by Uttar Mimamsa or final conclusion. So these are the six branches of philosophy. Now, nowadays, of course, due to the atheistic speculation, most of these philosophies have been have become atheistic, especially the Naya, and actually Karma Mimamsa, Naya, Vaisheshika and Shankha. All these four has become, because of these atheistic people, they did not consider the different branches of the philosophy, the different branches to be different rungs of the same ladder, but instead they considered these different sections of these philosophies to be different philosophical speculations altogether, and they speculated some atheistic, or they derived some atheistic conclusions out of these philosophical speculations. But the Vaishnava philosophy puts them all together and points out that how they are gradually elevating from one to the other and ultimately coming to the final conclusion, the Upasanakanda. And not only Upasanakanda, the ultimate culmination of Upasanakanda is in Sankirtan Yagga, the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord as given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, briefly we can discuss how it is gradually progressing from one to the other. The first one, the Karma Mimamsa, concludes, as I mentioned before, the Purva Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa, actually means the preliminary conclusion. And the preliminary conclusion is that good actions lead to enjoyment and bad actions lead to suffering. And since no one wants to suffer, so everyone must perform good activities. And good activities means acting according to the Vedic instructions. So this is how this Purva Mimamsa is leading to Karmakanda section of the Vedas. And the Karmakanda is giving different directions. Oh, you want to enjoy? Fine. You act in this way, in certain prescribed ways, and you will enjoy. You will get your enjoyment. You want to become very rich? So the prescriptions have been given in the Vedas, how one can become very rich. If you want to become the king of the earth planet, fine, perform these sacrifices, and you will become the king of the earth planet. You are not even satisfied being the king of the entire earth planet. You want to become the king of the heavenly planet? Fine, here is the prescription. So you can be elevated to the heavenly planets and become the king of the heavenly planets. You can also become the king, you can also have the position of King Indra. And even if you are not satisfied with the position of King Indra, you can go up to the position of Lord Brahma. One can also, so generally it is Karmakanda leads up to the heavenly planets, doesn't really go as far as Lord Brahma's position. But an intelligent man, in spite of acquiring all these, or in spite of fulfilling all his desires in the material platform, and in spite of having all these enjoyments, will finally realize that no matter how much I try to enjoy, I cannot enjoy in this material nature. I may even be elevated to the heavenly planets. I may be, may even become King Indra, but still I am not enjoying. So then he questions, why am I not enjoying? In spite of so much endeavor, why cannot I enjoy? So this why cannot I enjoy, in spite of so much endeavor, why I am still ending up in suffering, makes him transcend the Karmakanda platform and come to the, elevate him to the Gyanakanda platform. And in the Gyanakanda platform, the first thing the first branch of philosophy that touches or he comes up to is called Nyaya or logic. Like one questions, why am I suffering? So this answer to that why must come through logical conclusion, must by logical or reasoning, logic and reason, he must analyze why he is suffering. And this Nyaya branch of philosophy analyzes 21 different reasons of suffering and ultimately concludes that this material nature is actually a place for suffering. And those 21 reasons of suffering are, the first cause of pain or suffering is the body. We have this body and that's why we are suffering. And the Buddhist philosophy deals with only this branch of philosophy. Not only the whole Nyaya branch of philosophy, just this one section of the cause of suffering. The body is the cause of suffering. And they have analyzed this in the Nyaya philosophy, how this body is the cause of suffering. They pointed out, take a part of your body, say for instance your leg, and you consider in how many different ways you can inflict pain on your leg. You take a knife and cut your leg, you'll get a lot of pain. You take some fire and burn your leg, you'll get a lot of pain. You take a stone, smash your leg, you'll get a lot of pain. There are thousands of different ways of inflicting pain on your legs. But now you consider in how many different ways you can give pleasure to your leg. Practically none. You may say that, well, I mean, I can have a nice massage and it'll give me pleasure. Now, let me make a condition that let's get the best masseur of this world and let him give you the massage. Let him massage your leg and let me, with a saw, start cutting your leg. Will you agree to that condition? No sane person will. So we can see that compared to the pain that we can receive through this part of this body, pleasure is practically non-existent. So then that principle can be applied to any part of our body. Take any part of your body and you apply that principle, and you will see that this body cannot really have pleasure. Finally they conclude that this body is actually a wonderful machine for receiving pain. This body has been designed just in order to receive pain. The body is not designed for receiving pleasure, this material body. Then they further analyze that there are six senses, and those six senses are a cause of suffering. There are six elements or six objects of the senses. They are also the cause of suffering. And there are six kinds of growth towards the material direction, and they are also the cause of suffering. So 3 sixes are 18 plus 1, 19. And then the 20th consideration was that the happiness itself is the cause of suffering. But happiness also is the cause of pain. The concept of happiness is there, that's why the concept of pain is there. So happiness has been considered to be the 20th cause or 20th consideration, and the 21st consideration is pain itself is the cause of pain. So this way they sum up the 21 different causes of suffering, and then they ultimately conclude that this material nature is actually a place for suffering. the way one does not go to the prison house in order to enjoy. The same way no one comes to this material nature to enjoy. We all have come here to suffer. So let us become little intelligent once and for all and realize the fact that there is no enjoyment in this material nature. So here, this is the conclusion of the Naya branch of philosophy. But then they further went to analyze, then what is this material nature? Fine, agreed that this material nature is a place for suffering. But what actually is this material nature? And then they have analyzed, this material nature, and then ultimately they come to the conclusion that this material nature is actually a combination of the minutest particles called paramanus. The English equivalent of this word, paramanu, is atoms. But actually, the paramanu that has been described in the Vaisheshika branch of philosophy is far more subtle than this atom. Atoms can further be divided into electrons and protons and neutrons and even further, but this paramanus are minutest particles, and actually this paramanus are even the cause of different energies of the gross material nature. And these paramanus, due to their different frequencies, they appear to be different. The same particle, paramanu, in different frequency it appears to be, it gives rise to different concepts. So that is the final analysis of the Vaisheshika branch of philosophy. Then they further want to define, okay, fine, this material nature is consisting of the minutest particles called paramanus. But then, what actually is this material nature? Let us analyze that. And so they analyze the material nature, and that branch of the philosophy is called Shankha. Shankha means analytical study. And in the Shankha branch of philosophy, they analyze this material nature as the five elements. And we have, every individual has five senses. Then there are five objects of the senses. And then there are five working senses. And so this way, 5 fours are 20. Then three subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego, 23. And then the 24th consideration is the Mahatattva, or the basic element of this material creation, from which the whole material nature has been created. So this way, by 24 considerations, they have analyzed the material nature. But they didn't stop at that. Further, they considered that all these 24 elements are of objective nature. Object cannot exist without the subject. So the subject is I. Like, I am here, that's where the material nature is manifest. If I am not here, then this material nature will not exist for me. And further, if... I see. So then they considered that I is the subject, because the I perceives the object, and that also has been described in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, when Krishna says that bhinna prakriti rashtadha, this material nature is consisting of, the material nature consists of 8 different elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. But this material nature is sustained by the living entity who comes from the spiritual nature. Aparayam itastannam prakritim vidhi me param jiva bhutam mahabaho jajidam bharyate jagat. Aparayam itastannam, this material nature is actually external, an inferior energy of the Lord. But beyond that inferior material energy, there is a superior spiritual energy, and the living entities are coming from that superior energy, and the living entities sustain this material nature. This material nature is sustained by the living entities. If the living entities are withdrawn from the material nature, then the material nature will not be existing. And actually that's what happens finally when the material, at the time of annihilation, what happens, the Lord withdraws all the living entities. And when the living entities are withdrawn from the material nature, then the material nature just dissolves or becomes annihilated. So this living entity, the I, is the object. I is the subject, like I have an I, you and all of you have an I, individual I. And so every living entity has an I. And those I is the Atma, or the spirit soul. And the spirit soul is sustaining this material nature as the subject. And but then, so this way, the spirit soul is the 25th consideration. And in this 25th consideration, they are transcending the material platform and entering into the spiritual platform. But the atheistic Sangha, propounded by atheistic Kapila, who is not, this is not the Kapila, the son of Devahuti, but this is an atheistic Kapil who came much later. And according, he just made an atheistic conclusion that this 25th consideration is Ishvara. Ishvara means the controller. And everybody, every living entity is actually Ishvara. But the actual Vedic philosophy does not accept that. The actual Vedic philosophy means actually theistic philosophy or Vaishnav philosophy or Vaishnav analysis. The Vaishnav analysis, or rather the actual Vedic analysis, is that, okay, fine, this 25th consideration, the spirit soul is spiritual, and these spirit souls are sustaining the material nature, but these spirit souls are minute and many. Like I have a spirit and all of you have your spirit. And so this way every living entity has a spirit soul, and those spirit souls are many in number and minute in quantity. So anything that is minute and many has to have an origin, has to have a source. So what is the source? The source of all spirit souls, that is the super soul. So this way, super soul is the 26th consideration. The 25th consideration is the spirit soul, the minute living entity, and the 26th consideration is the absolute supreme spirit or the Lord in the heart. So this way they analyze the whole creation and ultimately reach up to this understanding of the Paramatma or the super soul. But then they consider that what is the relationship between the spirit soul and the super soul? Because as a part of a whole, as a part of the whole, the spirit soul must have some kind of relationship with the whole, the super soul. So what is that relationship? And that relationship has been established in the next branch of philosophy called Yoga. And this yoga literally means linking or adding. Yoga means adding or linking. So the process of yoga is actually to link the spirit soul with the super soul. And this yoga process has 8 different stages. That's why it's called Ashtanga Yoga. And all those 8 different stages are known as Jam, Niyam, Asan, Pranayam, Pratyahar, Dhyan, Dharan, and Samadhi. The first one is Jam, or external purification. The external purification consists not only of taking bath and wearing clean clothes, but it also includes the type of food we eat. Because whatever we eat, that is transformed in our body cells. Our body is made of the food that we eat. So if we take impure food, then our body also will become impure. So one must eat purified food. That is food that has been offered in sacrifice. That means the food that has been offered to the Lord or Lord's prasad. And then the next stage is dealing with internal purification, niyam. And that internal purification consists of the processes like speaking the truth, being non-violent, being charitable, being compassionate, reading the scriptures. So these things purify us internally. And then the third stage is called asan. And asan literally means a seat, like vash asan, a singhasan. Asan actually means a seat. And the understanding is that if we have a very nice vehicle, then we must drive that vehicle properly to reach our destination. And in order to drive it properly, we have to sit on that vehicle properly and then start to drive it. Now, this human body is a wonderful vehicle to reach our ultimate destination. So one must learn how to utilize this human body to reach that destination. So that process, using the body for reaching our ultimate destination, is called asan. But unfortunately nowadays, in the name of yoga, this asan, just this branch of yoga called asan, is practiced, and people very proudly claim, oh, I do asan. I stand on my head for 25 minutes every day. A big deal. But the ultimate goal hasn't been accomplished. The ultimate purpose hasn't been solved. So that is the, but the real purpose of the asan section or portion of the yoga is to use the body, tune up the body, not for material enjoyment, but to accomplish that spiritual destination. And then the fourth branch is known as pranayam. And pranayam means the controlling of the life air. The spirit soul is suspended on 5 kinds of air, known as pran, apan, shaman, van, and udan. And due to the imbalance or discord in this air, causes the agitation of the consciousness. And when the spirit becomes agitated, when the consciousness becomes agitated, the spirit becomes involved in the material nature. So through the pranayama, it is taught how to maintain the equilibrium of the airs on which the spirit soul is suspended. Because we see that the people, those who are very attached to the material nature, they're very agitated. Who are detached from the material nature, they are very peaceful. So when one becomes, when the life airs are in harmony, then one
becomes situated
in perfect, the spirit soul is peacefully disposed,
and then
he automatically becomes withdrawn from the material nature. Unless and until we are peaceful in inwardly, we cannot become detached from this material nature. And then the fifth branch is called pratyahara. Pratyahara literally means withdrawal. The senses are constantly running towards the objects of the senses. Dhyate vishayan pumsha shangaste shupajayate. Our senses are constantly running towards the objects of the senses, and that's what is causing us the entanglement with the material nature. So, in the fifth stage, one withdraws, the fifth stage of the yoga, one withdraws his senses from the objects of the senses. And at that stage, although his eyes may be open and the objects may be in front of his eyes, but he won't see them. The sound may be there, the blaring sound may be there next to his ears, but he won't hear them. So this way he doesn't allow his senses to go out anymore. He completely withdraws his senses inwardly. That's what also Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. The way a tortoise withdraws his limbs into his body, the same way a yogi knows how to withdraw his senses from the objects of the senses. And we notice it in our day-to-day life also, like when, say now we are listening to this class, and you are listening to, that there are so many sounds outside, the humming of the air conditioner or whatever it is, and the chirping of the birds and so on and so forth, but you don't register them. Because your mind is withdrawn from those sounds, or even the objects that are in front of your eyes, you don't even see them. So this way we can see that it is possible to withdraw our senses completely from the objects of the senses. So that branch is called pratyahara, or withdrawal. And then comes the sixth branch of the Vedas, a sixth stage of Ashtanga Yoga called Dhyana or meditation. So that is, in that stage one projects his consciousness inwardly onto the Lord in the heart. Meditation doesn't just mean to think about anything and everything. For that matter, everyone is meditating. Everyone is meditating on money or women or cars or children. So many things they are meditating on. Krishna says that dhyate vishayan pumsha. Actually, this word dhyan is coming from dhyan, means meditating. Everyone is meditating on the objects of the senses. But a yogi, he withdraws his senses and meditates on the Lord in the heart. And then when the projection of his consciousness becomes fixed on the Lord's lotus feet, then that stage is the seventh stage known as dharan, or fixing. And then finally, when he perceives the Lord in the heart, then he is in the eighth stage of Ashtanga Yoga, the final stage of Ashtanga Yoga, called samadhi, a trance. When a person perceives the Lord in the heart, then he is totally absorbed inwardly. He does not have any tendency to come out anymore, or become entangled with the external nature anymore. Because the vision of the Lord is so wonderful, so beautiful, that when one gets to see the Lord once, he becomes totally disgusted with the external material nature. Like that has been wonderfully described in Srimad Bhagavatam through Narad Muni. Narad Muni, in his previous life, he just got a glimpse of the Lord. And just by seeing the Lord, he experienced such wonderful bliss that he wanted to experience it again and again. But he could not see the Lord, and he tried to perceive the Lord very earnestly for a long, long time by different austerities and penances. But then finally he heard from the Lord that, Narad, in this life you won't be able to see me again, but in your next life you will become one of my associates. So that's how one feels when one sees the Lord in the heart. It is so beautiful, the vision of the Lord, that he becomes totally detached to anything else externally. So when one, that is the final stage of yoga. But when one perceives the Lord in the heart, then what happens? Then he perceives the Lord as the Supreme Spirit, and he perceives himself as a minute, insignificant part of that Supreme Spirit. So when an individual comes across to someone who is very great, then how does he feel? He feels that automatically his head is bending down in great awe and reverence. So that happens when a spirit soul perceives the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his heart. He surrenders himself unto him. So this surrender actually transcends the Gyanakanda platform and comes to the spiritual platform, or this is the beginning of Upasana Kanda. So when one surrenders unto the Lord, and that is called Prapatti or Sharanagati, meaning surrender. So when a devotee surrenders, the individual surrenders himself unto the Lord, then he is perfectly situated on the spiritual platform. Then there is no more endeavor to even understand the Lord or perceive the Lord. And this surrender is actually the Upasana Kanda that leads him to different kinds of rendering devotional service to the Lord. And this Upasana Kanda has different ways of performing Upasana or worship to the Lord according to time, place, different times. Like in Saptayuga it is dhyan or meditation, in Tretayuga it is performing sacrifice, yajna, in Dwaparayuga it is worshipping the Lord in the temple, and Kaliyuga it is performing the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So this is how it is described, that finally it comes to this congregational chanting, especially for this age. Often people think that why we chant, why these Krishna devotees are chanting some strange songs or singing some strange songs right in the middle of the street. But we know that this is the best way to worship the Lord. Sankirtan yogya kare Krishna aradhan. The best process of worshipping Krishna in this age is by means of a sacrifice called Sankirtan. So this is how it has been pointed out in the Vedas, that the worshipping the Lord is the highest perfection, and in this age of the Kali, performing sacrifice, worshipping the Lord, Lord by means of Sankirtan is the highest kind of sacrifice or highest kind of worship. So we are very fortunate to be lifted into that platform, or onto that platform, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. So let us take full advantage of it. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
You were describing that the Puranas were in different modes. So what does that actually mean with reference to people being taught? from the different Puranas.
That's why in this age of Kali, the essence of the Purana and the essence of Upanishad has been given. The essence of all the Puranas is Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Pramanam Amalam, Bhagavat Puran, and the essence of all the Upanishads is Gita Upanishad. Right? So that's what Mahaprabhu gave us. The Gita and Upanishad, these are the two prescribed scriptures for us. We don't have to go through all the different Purans and Upanishads. If we can read, well and good. But if we can't read, it doesn't really matter so much. That is the different branch, you know, the Vedas were divided into different sections, like Rig, Sham, Yaju and Atharva, right? So, generally there are four Vedas, Chatur Veda, and three Vedas, sometimes I think Atharva and Yaju is compiled together. So when Yaju and Atharva has been compiled together, then it is three. But when Yaju and Atharva are separated, Atharva Veda is actually the practical application. Right? So three are theoretical and Atharva is the practical application. Right? So that's how it is four also. Processes.
So I use
Yeah. Krishna does not come as Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in every age. That's a very special one. But in other ages, other Kali Yugas, the Lord comes as the Yugavatar, and he instructs on this Sankirtan process. That is, there in the age of Satyayug, the Lord appears in a white complexion. In Tretayug, he appears in red complexion. In Dwaparyug, he appears in a black complexion, a blackish complexion. And Kali Yuga, he appears in yellowish complexion. Sheta Rakto Pitas Tatha Idantu Krishnatangata. So the Yugavatar comes, but not Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, does not come in order to relish the love of loving ecstasy of Radharani. That is once every day of Brahma, the Lord comes. After Krishna comes as Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in other ages, other Kali Yugas, he comes as the Yugavatar, whose complexion is yellowish, and he establishes the Yuga Dharma of Sankirtan. Hare Krishna. So any other questions?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So,
I didn't get the point. I mean, yeah, right.
Right.
That is the atheistic one. That's not the theistic one. The theistic one, although they do not go into understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead as such, but they accept the God is there. And he is giving he is an impartial judge who is judging you according to your action. Right? You see, when one is in the gross bodily platform, although he may be aware of the Lord's existence, but still he doesn't really become fully surrendered to him. Right? He wants to enjoy. Okay, God is there, let him sit in heaven, but let me enjoy myself in this earth planet. That's the mood of the materialistic people. So that's why the instruction is given, fine, you want to enjoy, go ahead, enjoy. But enjoy properly, not defying the laws of the Vedas, but according to the laws of the Vedas. And then when you do that, then gradually you come to the platform of understanding that, well, I am trying to enjoy, but I am not enjoying. Right? Like any intelligent man will realize that in due course of time. That although we are trying to enjoy, but we are not enjoying actually. And that is pushing him up to the further higher platform, the intellectual platform, where he tries to analyze, why am I suffering? So let me be rid of this suffering. How can I become free from this suffering? You see, everything is there in the Veda. In the material nature, whatever we are seeing is simply the reflection. So whatever is there in the reflection must be there in the original thing, in the real thing. Right? So the six branches of philosophies that are here are actually there in the actual reality. But they are those six branches of philosophies are there. It's not that they originated those philosophies. They are not their philosophies. They simply tried to, write their own purport. Because they were, they were wise guys, because they thought that they knew better than, atheistic people, they are very puffed up. They think that they know better because they want to become God themselves. So they try to, give some other interpretation. And that's what has been also described in Mahabharata. That tarko pratishtha srutaya bibhinna nasho rishir jasya matangna bhinnam dharmasya tattam nihitam guhayam maha jano jana gatasya pantha. The tarko apratishtha srutaya bibhinna, by arguments Vedas become innumerable, right? Just one Veda becomes, breaks into different fragments, because nasho rishir jasya matangna bhinnam. One is not considered to be a philosopher unless and until he has his own understanding or own conclusion. But that is not the way to approach the Vedas. The way to approach the Vedas is to follow the footsteps of the Mahajans. So even if you are a Muni or a Rishi, mental speculator, you can't really understand the Vedas. So although these people, they were great personalities, great scholars, I'm talking about not all of them, mainly Jaimini, Kopil, Konad, and these three. So they have been, considered to be, they have been rejected. Because where is the room for mental speculation? Like Prabhupada gave us the knowledge. Now over and above Prabhupada, if I try to, write my own thesis or write my, something different from Prabhupada's understanding, right, or Prabhupada's teachings, Prabhupada's instruction, then that will be stupidity, right? And that will cause me trouble, right? And that's what happened. Like those people are in trouble and they caused a great trouble to the world.
What is nature? Is this how they do it?
Yeah. Tantra means practice. Mantra is the theory and Tantra is the practice. Right? Like we have also Tantra. There are three kinds of Tantras, the three kinds of practices. The practice of in the mode of ignorance, practice in the mode of passion, practice in the mode of goodness. Now the practice in the mode of ignorance is called Tamushik Tantra. Right? Tamush means ignorance. And then Rajashik, passionate, and then Shattik. Now we practice Shattik Tantra. That's why we are called Sattvatas. We practice the rituals in the mode of goodness. Vaishnavas are Sattvatas. I think I've taken enough time. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.